Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
The McNeil and Parkin Show. Afternoons on The Score.
He writes to The Athletic, of course, does a great job and covers the Cubbies, and he says hello. So, hi, Dave. How are you today, pal? Okay?
I'm doing great. This feels like the first day of school all over again. You're giving me flashbacks here, Chris. Sahadev, it's quite all right. I'm used to it. Like I said, first day of school every day.
First, those teachers must have had a problem, Sahadev. No question. Oh, we got the Cubbies.
The McNeil and Parkin Show on 670 The Score.
This hour on The Score brought to you by Vasectomy Clinics of Chicago. Sahadev Sharma from The Athletic with us.
Not gonna write here anymore.
Honestly, that's like a point of pride to have Chris Mad Dog Russo mispronounce your name.
No, I was thrilled with that. I was quite happy. Yeah, I had no issues with that.
God, if I went on, I would be rooting for him to mispronounce my name. That's incredible.
I'm glad you're here. So I can look you in the eyes and say thank you for programming the radio station for at least a week, possibly the summer, with your piece on Theo Law.
Oh,
it was fantastic journalism. Nicely done, man.
I hope it's not a summer-long topic. That wouldn't be good for them. I don't think that would be a good thing for the Cubs if we're still talking about this even a couple weeks from now. I don't know if I'd call it Theo Law. I think I'd call it, you know, they came away from those exit meetings, and there were a lot of things that the player said that struck a chord with Theo and Jed, and they said, okay, we need to listen to what they're saying and figure out how we can work together with them and find some solutions to the issues that they've brought up. This was player-driven, and I thought there were, you know, go look at what Ben Zobrist said in the piece, go look at what John Lester said in the piece. Those were some of the things that stood out to me, that the players had some things that they needed to get off their chest, and they wanted to kind of build some structure in the clubhouse that they felt was lacking.
What did you make of Theo's pushback to the article, if you call it that, saying that the article made it seem like it was more from the executives as opposed to the players?
Yeah, no, I understand where he's coming from. I'd prefer not to go back and forth with Theo on the radio. I mean, I'm happy to say that I thought we presented it accurately and well, and I can see where he's coming from. But I also maybe slightly disagree with him, but I think I know where he's coming from.
And now one of those players, John Lester, says last night after he pitched his ass off and played baseball as well, in addition to pitching, that we're putting too much pressure on ourselves. We need to lighten up a little bit, essentially, is what he says. So where's the middle?
I think that's the hard part about all of this. The whole time, all offseason, the reason Patrick and I wanted to write this piece and were interested in this idea is because that was talked about from the moment they lost to the Rockies, John Lester to Javier Baez. They talked about this lack of edge or this sense of urgency. They were talking about this ambiguous concept. What does that mean? What is that? How do you fix that? Why are you talking about it so much? Theo brought it up again, and then he brought it up again and again. It was something that was a recurring theme all offseason. It was staring us in the face. Yes, it's probably amplified when you don't spend that much money in the offseason. Sure. It becomes a bigger deal. It becomes the focus. I understand that, but it was the focus. So we had to figure out what that meant, and you dig into it, and this is what they mean. I don't think that directly is what John Lester is talking about. I just think he's talking about we got off to a bad start, and when you get off to a bad start, and especially with those two bullpen blow-ups and then that error-filled game, those are bad, bad losses, and that sticks in your mind, and that's now I have to make the pitch, now I have to get the hit, because we got to end this craziness, because it's a bad start. It's an ugly way to start a season. And I asked Joe this after the third game in Texas.
The second game that they blew,
basically asked him, you know, it's early, but, you know, these are the types of things that can get in players' heads. These types of losses are the hardest to handle. Think about it as fans. When you guys watch a game, what's the hardest thing to swallow? When a bullpen blows a lead, it's really frustrating as a fan. Now, think about it as the players. It's frustrating for them, too, especially that Texas series, the way they played. It was the pitching that sunk them. So I think it's less about, oh, we have all these new philosophies and rules in the clubhouse and it's hanging over everyone's head. I really think it's strictly, it's a 1-4 start, a terrible start to, you know, five games in. It's not ideal. And you don't, and you have all these feelings that are starting to build. And a guy like Steve Cishek doesn't walk three people. You know, that's a bad week for him, not a bad game. So it's really odd stuff that's happening and it's starting to pile up. And you want to nip it in the bud quickly.
Do you think what we're seeing is randomness? Is it what they are because they didn't address bullpen help? How legitimate do you think these problems five games in are going to be problems 35 games in?
I think the reason I kind of clung on to it early on is because it's something that I talked about all offseason. You know, you can justify not going after Bryce Harper, not going after Manny Machado. You can't justify not going after the bigger names in the bullpen. Andrew Miller, Adam Ottavino, Zach Britton, all those, each one of those guys addresses a need. Does it fix this 1-4 start? No, of course not. But those are issues that were glaring coming into the season. So that's why it feels bigger. But yes, there is a bit of randomness here when we talk about Cishek, when we talk about Strope having, he threw, 5-10 pitches and he cost them the game there. Mike Montgomery giving up a ton of home runs. That's a ground ball guy. Finally got a ground ball, I think, yesterday. He's given up, two home runs and gotten two outs. These aren't normal things. So it's a combination. Yes, the bullpen is an issue, but now guys that you trust in the bullpen aren't delivering either. That's what I'm talking about with the snowball effect.
Sahadev Sharma from The Athletic is our guest as we're live at the lobby of 1-2 Prue for our Baseball is Back show. We'll be giving away the Cubs season tickets in the 5 o'clock hour. So how do you balance those names that you talked about? And I know Ottavino, I think he was only 3 years, $27 million, so that's more in line. But Theo traded Gleyber Torres for 1 year of Chapman. He traded Soler for 1 year of Wade Davis. He signed Brandon Morrow for a 2-year contract. He doesn't believe in 4- and 5-year top of the market deals for relief pitchers.
I don't think a reliever got that. You know,
yeah.
Craig Kimbrell is still out on the market, so relievers
with
aren't
a draft
getting
pick
that.
Attached to
yeah.
him.
Yeah. So I mean, I get not going hard after Kimbrell. I get it. Does he answer a bunch of needs? Does it make a ton of sense? Sure. But I get that. I don't get not going after the guys that are 2- or 3-year deals that aren't an albatross. Even if the contract goes poof like that from game one, those aren't albatross deals for a team like the Cubs. Especially, it's 1 year where you're really high up as far as payroll goes. So it's just 2019. Beyond that, you can allocate those funds for Andrew Miller or Zach Britton. They help you in 2020 and 2021, too.
Right. Hamels is off the book. Zobrist off the book. Morrow off the book.
Yeah.
So
there's reason to go after those guys, and it makes sense. It's not the 10-year deal. Everything was focused on, we don't have money. Oh, we can't put a 10-year deal on the books, that'll hamstring us for a decade. Yes, I get that. I don't fully agree with it, but I get where that's coming from. I don't think the excuses for the bullpen match up with that philosophy.
What are Kimbrel's demands? I mean, they've got to be way out of line. He's still
sitting
there. Yeah,
no, I think by now it's kind of to the point where even he realizes there's no point in coming in now unless someone's going to meet like a solid 1-year demand. I think he's probably accepted by now that he's getting a 1-year deal. So I think it makes the
most
sense.
So why not swoop in and offer him a fat-ass 2-year deal?
Well, you lose the draft pick.
Yeah.
And the budget stuff is real, you know? They're not budging from the budget. It's not like Theo just keeps telling us this and it's not true.
Right.
I mean, it's a real thing that they have to deal with. Are they happy about it? Do they love having a budget? No, of course not. You know,
it's come so far, and the window is right there.
Mac, you're preaching to the choir. I agree with you. When you're, especially right now, 2019, come on. You see the issues with this team. They're right there in front of you. Let's not even talk about the five games in. I'm talking about before the season. You saw them.
Yep.
So you address them, right? And they couldn't. They didn't have the budget. You can blame Theo. You can blame for how he spent before. You can blame the ownership for not being willing to, you know, be a little less restrictive with it. But the reality is they are being restrictive with the budget, whether that's just they have no choice, whether Tom Ricketts can't even move that or not. We don't really have much clarity on that. I've asked questions about that and get these ambiguous answers. So it's all we know is that this is the budget. They're not going over it, and Theo and Jed have to work with that.
So which of these names, Dylan Maples, Kyle Ryan, Rowan Wick, Tim Collins, Dwayne Underwood, Xavier Cedeno, Tony Barnett. I know those last two were added this offseason and started on the injured list. Those are pitchers on the 40-man roster right now. Who of those guys are going to be relevant this year?
Well, they're going to need a few of them to be relevant. It'd be really hard for me to say I know who's going to be relevant. I heard great things about Dylan Maples, saw great things. The guy sits in the upper 90s, has a nasty slider, relies on that slider, doesn't command the fastball very well. So he's going to throw like 60% sliders. It's a weird mix. It's how pitchers pitch now. So, you know, it's a different way to pitch now.
But how old is he?
He's about 24, 25. He's young. I want to say he was Hendry and Wilkins' last draft.
Okay.
North Carolina was committed to North Carolina, and they spent above budget to get him. In that final draft where they drafted Javi and a few other guys where they were willing to finally spend in the draft. I think it was the final year you could actually spend above, you know, slot prices, and everything wasn't locked in. You could just spend as much as you want. And he's a talented guy. That's one guy. I think that Dakota Mekas isn't on the 40-man. You named 40-man guys. I think there are other guys, too, that can help. Barnett and Cedeno will probably be up here at some point. I think more importantly, it's how do you maneuver all these guys?
Well, that was the next question. What are the roadblocks? Because they paid Dunsing to go away.
Sure.
And then there's limited guys with options back there. So is it that Tyler Chatwood's going to get DFA'd? Is that on the table here?
Yeah, I think anything has to be on the table when you're talking about competing and how far down the line are we talking. I don't think they're going to panic and start calling guys up and down right now. They're not going to DFA Tyler Chatwood one outing into his season, right?
Right.
And it started off okay.
And I'm not suggesting they should. I'm just asking in terms of like guys who have options, right? Jed today was on the station and he said, you know, it was like Warden Norton and salvation lies within. He's like, we are not focused on external solutions. We are focused on internal solutions.
Yeah, and they've been saying that Theo said, you know, we have 16 guys about that we really like. And obviously all 16 aren't up right now. Some of them are going to be in AAA. Some of them are on the injured list. I think, you know, you look at who has options. It's Edwards and Rosario. Right now, you know, you have to see if Edwards gets right. You want him to be a big part of this bullpen. In theory, he has the chance to be a big part of this bullpen. Rosario, I think, eventually gets sent down, and he's going to be part of that up-and-down train. We're going to see this. I agree. The big question is, what do you do then as far as DFAing guys? How do you maneuver guys around? It's going to be interesting. I mean, a week ago, I think a lot of fans would have said, just DFA Brandon Kinsler and call up Alan Webster and give him that 40-man spot. Well, now Brandon Kinsler's the best guy in the bullpen a weekend. So it's a weird situation. Bullpens are like that. We have no clue, really, who's going to be good, who's not going to be good, when's Brandon Morrow going to come back. All these weird things are, you know, that they have to deal with. And
I hate this conversation.
Yeah. Well, it's the conversation we have to have. So, Sahada, let's do the crystal ball for tonight. After Yu Darvish gets out of the sixth and the Cubs have a small lead, who does Joe give the ball to?
Yeah, so it's, what, seventh, eighth, ninth? I mean, I guess he's going to go with...
You got to go with Kinsler right now, don't you?
Well, how many pitches? Kinsler pitched yesterday in the seventh, right? I mean, is he up? Is he available? Is he ready to go again? You know, can you go to... Do you just go to Strope right away? Cishek threw, what, over 20 pitches probably? I mean, he walked three guys, so that's 12 pitches right there. So, and I think a few of them were full counts. So, you know, I mean... You have to look at that. It's not an ideal situation, but I also think he's not going to be afraid. Joe's not afraid to go to a guy because he had a bad outing last week or yesterday or 2 days ago. So Carl Edwards could get the call again, and I know that's going to stress Cubs fans out. But Joe's not the type to just dismiss someone.
He's got a pitch.
Yeah, and I mean, what are his options, really?
Joe has no options.
You can't put this on Joe Maddon. You know, the bullpen right now, he's pulling the right levers, in theory, and they're not executing. Steve Cishek doesn't walk three guys. I don't know how many times I can say that, but that's the reality. He doesn't do that. So to see that and then be like, Joe, why'd you call Steve Cishek in? I mean, that's not fair. Come on. I mean, these guys have to execute. Joe has to work with what he has. There's so many little things to go. It's really frustrating to see bullpens do this. So... It's I get your frustration right there. You hate this conversation. It's a frustrating conversation. So think about how it feels to lose those games.
Sahadev Sharma, beat writer for the Cubs for the Athletic, going to hang out. You got another segment in you.
Sure.
I want to talk some big picture stuff. They extended David Bodie, and the landscape around them is changing in baseball. So we can project this season and many guys well beyond this season with the Cubs. We'll do some big picture stuff with Sahadev Sharma coming up on the Score.
I just go out there and try to be the best David Bodie player I can be. I don't put a limit on what I can achieve or what I do. I just try to approach each day of getting a little bit better each day. And at the end of the day, then that's where it's going to be.
The Bodie Show.
Professional athlete David Bodie can go third person. That's incredible. I'm just trying to be the best Danny Parkins I can be.
Hey, yeah. Well, he's, what, $5 million per now? Whatever
no.
it is. Well, whatever it is.
$950K this year.
Right.
$15 million over five. So yeah. Average of $3 million
average
a year.
Average of three. Yeah. You can talk about yourself that way when you're making $3 million.
I guess. It's the Back to Baseball Show in the lobby of 1-2 Prue, presented by Redemption Rye Whiskey. Rye is back, and so is baseball. Get your Redemption Rye Whiskey or Bourbon today. I'm definitely going to be having some of that if the Cubs keep losing. And by Sweetwater Tavern and Grill, newly remodeled and reopened on the Mag Mile. They dropped off breakfast, lunch, dinner. The food from Sweetwater Tavern and Grill is absolutely spectacular. By the end of the show, one lucky Score listener will have Cubs season tickets, and it's all possible because of Sweetwater Tavern and Grill and Redemption Rye Whiskey. Sahadev Sharma is with us here in the lobby of 1-2 Prue. I always talk about how you can see what these teams are doing based on their actions and not their words. And I love that they speak and that they're so transparent and talk to you guys and talk to us because it's great and they're good communicators. But
sure.
When they don't extend Joe Maddon, their actions tell me that that guy might not be long for this job. When they do extend David Bodie, that tells me like, oh, they think that this guy's got a place on a big league roster for the next 5 years. Were you surprised by David Bodie's extension?
Yeah, surprised in the sense that I was just perplexed and didn't see it coming at all. But it makes sense. You know, this is a guy with, I think he's established his floor now. He's at worst a bench player, quality utility guy on a winning team. And he's got a ceiling that we don't really know. He's untapped something with his swing that just recently happened. So when that happens recently, and this guy always, you know, played fundamentally sound, is a driven guy, is a hard worker, all those intangibles, when he has that, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, a slight swing change. Is there something more here? Oh, yes, there is something more here. Well, how far does that go? We don't know yet. He needs to start hitting breaking balls instead of just fastballs.
That would help.
But, you know, these are things that, you know, he's still in the process of figuring everything out. I don't want to get crazy with comparisons. I've heard some crazy comparisons, and lofty ceiling comps.
With Bodie? Give us some of them.
Well,
Joe hasn't said Manny Ramirez.
No.
Serving
no,
that
I'm talking,
for hobby
like,
or bias.
So you think swing changes, think guys that were on this path of, well, Bodie was on a path of being out of baseball, you know, but Justin Turner was a comp someone gave me of someone that completely was not on anyone's radar and then made a slight swing change and became a superstar. I don't think David Bodie's going to be a superstar, you know? But I think he's become a guy that was...
That guy's the president of the David Bodie fan club, Mac.
No question.
I just said he would get 400 plate appearances at some point.
Yeah, I could see that. I mean, think about it.
So you think he's more than a utility player?
I don't... I wouldn't...
You're not convinced, but you're leaning in that direction.
I could see it. Okay. I mean, I see the work ethic. I see the talent. I see what he can do. Like I said, he's got to... There are
Turner.
Holes. There are holes you got to that you got to close to get to certain levels. Right now, he's a utility player, and I think that's valuable to have. He's a quality utility player in the sense that he can play multiple positions on a winning team. Those things, that's hard to find, and he just... You know, he seems like he puts in the work and is willing to make adjustments to maybe get to another level. I'd be surprised if we're talking about him making All-Star games and an MVP conversation. I mean, that's Justin Turner. I don't think he's going to reach that level of play. But if he becomes an everyday player, I think that's a huge win, too. I mean, what he's become is a huge win, right?
Sure.
So I mean, if he becomes an everyday player and he's quality and he can start every day for a winning team, that's completely out of the blue and a huge development win for this team.
There's a perception out there, it's grown, and already one start into the season, it's grown more on Yu Darvish, that he is fragile between the ears. Your opinion, is that fair?
I'm not the type to want to really like make strong statements with that. I think it's hard to really know, but right now, okay, I mean, if you look at what the evidence that we have, he does, when a big moment hits, there are times when he doesn't perform. From the World Series on, I mean, think about all the things that happened last year before he was hurt. Before he was hurt, there was something opening in the opener in Miami about he may have felt a cramp, he may not have in his hand, right? And then there
was an ump squeezing him one game.
Yeah, it was the ump. He walked a pitcher against Colorado, I want to say, and that led to an unraveling. There were multiple instances where one moment led to an unraveling. Now, is that a lack of focus? Is that a lack of ability to handle those big moments? It's hard to say with certainty, but yeah, I think you can if right now the evidence shows us we need proof that he can handle big moments, that he won't come on the mound and all of a sudden, oh, here's, I'm in Texas, this is a big deal for me,
yeah,
and then be overwhelmed by that. Oh, it's the World Series, and, you know, I dominated the Cubs in the NLCS, and now I got to prove it on the big stage against the Astros. So we need to see him overcome those moments for those to go away. I don't like saying that he can't handle those moments. People can learn. People can develop, especially those mental things. You can talk through them, and maybe he figures something out that helps him visualize things or focus. A lot of, you know, that's what the mental skills guys are there for, to help him work through these things. I think there's something there where he does have some focus issues, and he needs to rectify that. I think Hotovy may have said that to a certain extent on the station. So, you know, there are things that he just needs to. Really, it's all about just go out there and you have amazing stuff. Just let it ride. Just let it go, because he's a great pitcher and he's got all the talent in the world. Sometimes things can get in the way that are more than just talent. I'd prefer to believe that he can overcome that, if that's even the case.
Okay. What's your perception about where the Cubs are now in terms of extensions and what's going on around baseball, with all of a sudden guys are just signing them all over the place?
Yeah, no. I mean, obviously they want to get in on that. They have two extensions already.
Yep.
I'm sure they'd love to do more. I'm not sure how anxious they are to do the heavy lifting during the season, especially now. We're looking at a 1-4 start, so I don't think they want to.
And we're still 3 years away on,
yeah,
Baez and Bryant, right?
Sure, but I don't think that means that they're going to avoid that. I think they want to engage those guys. How hard they engage a guy like Bryant as opposed to Baez, Bryant, I think maybe with this trend now, you're starting to see maybe Bryant isn't the 100% no that I felt he was 6 months ago. You know, there's some things that can change there, and they have, obviously, with the way that the games, other players are signing. I've been shocked by this, but it's clear that what's happening across baseball is a trend. Players are seeing what's happening in free agency and realizing, well, better get my money now. A lot of these have opt-outs of notice right after when the new CBA would come out. So that's also interesting. They want to have some safety up until that point, and then let's see where it shakes out with the new CBA. Are they striking? Are they not? What's happening? There's a lot of things up in the air, so it kind of changes the calculus on extensions now. If I had to say who they are most likely of extended, I'd say Hobby is the most likely. Wilson is probably close after that. I didn't see Bodie coming, though, so I didn't have him on my list originally.
Turner overdrive.
And I would not rule out Bryant as a complete zero anymore, but it's very, very unlikely, I would say.
And Joe Maddon?
This is what I said before the season. I said I think it's highly unlikely he's back next year. I would be shocked. When you go into this season the way they did, Theo announced no extension back in November. There's not going to be an extension. Maybe we'll talk about it towards the end of the season, right? So that was it wasn't going to happen. It's not happening right now. My contention is he needed, like, the perfect season. And it's still possible. 1-4 doesn't eliminate that. But he needed Red Sox last year's type season, right?
Yeah.
Where you just stomp through the regular season and then you stomp through the playoffs. Everybody is one. This is just this dominant unit that has rallied around their manager and is just, shows no sign of real weakness.
and they go out there and they win everything. That, I mean, that's what I see as the only possibility. And even then, I wouldn't have been shocked if they win it all and they say, hey, that was a great 5 years. We got two World Series. We accomplished amazing things together. We're going to, I say we, you know, end this with you going out on top type thing. That's just my feeling when I talk to people around the game outside of the organization. Nobody seems to believe, hey, Joe Maddon's coming back. Just they're being patient with this. The read I have is that this is his, in all likelihood, his last season with the Cubs.
Which is now what I'm rooting for. Them to win the World Series and us immediately to have controversy of Joe Maddon leaving.
And they can still win that World Series.
Yes, they
can. There's 157 games to go. I'll make a prediction. It's today's the 4th of April. On the 4th of May, 1 month from today, we'll be laughing at all the panic that we suffered the first seven games of the season.
I hope
we'll
you're
be
right.
Laughing at it.
Morrow won't be back by then, and the bullpen will still be a thing. And
he could be back by then.
The 4th of May?
I mean, that's around when he's supposed to be back, right?
Sometime in May, right?
Yeah,
so that's
early May.
The guy's always hurt. I can't count on this guy. I'm down, Zahadov. I hope to laugh at it, too.
Have a sip of the whiskey.
That'll help. Yeah, That'll certainly help. You said that there was something that you needed to get.
Yeah, I need a grooming tip. I hope I don't embarrass you. What do you do for your skin, man? You have the most amazing skin I've ever seen.
I thought it was going to be a beard.
I've got horrible skin. I've tried things. Dermabrasion. Your skin is just electric.
Don't I shower daily?
That's it.
I use soap.
Okay. All right.
Bar of soap.
All right. I get that. I do that too. Anyway, keep doing it.
He's blessed.
Keep doing it. You are.
I'm also Indian. I don't know. Maybe
yes,
that.
I
maybe
noticed.
It's,
yes. I noticed.
This isn't just a tan.
What? Breaking news on the score. Sahada, man, you do great work.
That'll do it.
I say this all the time, that if Chicago sports fans aren't subscribing to The Athletic, then they're not as informed as the rest of us who
thank
are.
You
guys do incredible work. So thank you for coming by, man. We
of course.
Appreciate
it. Thanks for having me.
That's Zahadov Sharma. Come see us in the lobby of 1-2 Pru. It's McNeil and Parkins on the score.
312-644-6767 out to Des Moines. And Josh. Hey, Josh, you're on the score.
Hey, how you doing? Hey, I got a question. Do you think Kimbrel out there is like the Khalil Mack for the Cubs, to acquire him to be that game changer? I know he's going to want a lot of years. He's going to want a little bit of money. But the window that the Cubs have right now is getting smaller and smaller.
Yeah, there it is. Craig Kimbrel, Khalil Mack. Beautiful. It's beautiful. I swear, man, last night, I know Twitter is not indicative of the real world, but the Cubs blow a lead, and it's 200 people tweeting at me to sign Craig Kimbrel.
Yeah, I wanted nothing to do with social media after that thing last night. I was content to call it an early night. I was in bed by 10:15. Lights out.
Listen, I'm all for it. Sure, it would make them better. It doesn't solve 17 runs in 17 innings.
No, the closer only gets the ball for three outs usually. Sometimes four. Sometimes even a manager will get him a ball for five outs. But, that doesn't help you in the seventh inning last night or any other night when the Cubs' middle relievers have been dreadful.
And no relief pitcher is Khalil Mack. Don't insult Khalil Mack like that.
I know.
No baseball player is Khalil Mack.
Yeah, you can't.
You think
can't
Kimbrel out there is like the Khalil Mack for the Cubs?
No, I don't. I don't think Bryce Harper is like Khalil Mack.
No.
Remember what Khalil Mack did in Wisconsin, his first game as a Bear?
Yeah.
They should sign him and get him to Milwaukee. He's Khalil Mack in double nits.
Tom Izzo said that he needed Khalil Mack in order to guard Zion Williamson, so he could just be a three-sport athlete.
It'd be great.
Hey, look who we found.
Dan Bernstein is here. My guy. I miss Dan Bernstein every day at 1 o'clock.
Yeah, I miss you guys. You know, I'm around. I'm here. I'm always just kind of futzing around doing things.
You're a futzer.
Yeah, we do the videos after for leftovers. I usually write a column, so I say anytime.
How's the new 3-hour cruise?
Shorter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
About 25% shorter?
Yeah. Yeah, just about that.
It's going to take me a long, long time to get used to the midway starting at 10:20.
It's the same midway you have come to know and love.
Yeah, but it's 11. It's Mike Francesa taking me up to 11. It's all those things. I miss it at 11.
You are set in your ways.
I'm a creature of habits.
You must be adaptable.
Yeah, I'll try. But I told Bernstein the other day, and I wanted to tell him this off the air, my daily travels to see my pops in Crown Point. I drove by a bar on Main Street in downtown Crown Point. It's a Bob Seger-themed bar. It's the Silver Bullets.
I'll see you guys later.
Bar. That's why I brought Burns
the
in.
The idea.
I know. I can't hang with you.
But the fact that it exists, like, that's pretty special. It could be like... like Brigadoon, where it just appeared for you.
You're right, though. I have to go in. I have to go in and meet the people.
You've got to meet you have to document it on video or with still photography of some kind. You've got to go find out the depth of the attachment to Bob Seger that would cause somebody to say, not only am I going to open a bar, I'm going to dedicate this bar to the music and life of Bob Seger.
There's stenciling on the window outside, and it says, down on Main Street. It's on Main Street. There's another one, where the night moves. Oh my God. It's like, you got to be kidding me. I do have to go meet the people who spend their hard-earned dollars in a Bob Seger bar, though.
Yeah, document. This is like an anthropological quest for you to document these people. I definitely want to see that.
I'd be like Rust Cole in the great year one of True Detective when he went to that Baptist revival. I think it's safe to say nobody here is going to split the atom, Marty.
Maybe not.
What do you think the average IQ of these people is?
Or like, was it James Carville at the football game down in Baton Rouge? And he says, you realize that nobody here can even spell LSU.
I will document those. Sunday afternoon, I'm laughing so hard. Yes. I'd driven by it, or I would have taken a picture.
I was going to say, where's the social media presence here? We need a live stream.
Yeah, I thought of Bernstein down on Main Street, Bob Seger.
And so I emailed you the Packers story on Bleacher Report the moment I saw it.
Trust me, I read the whole thing immediately. I've reread, actually, most of it.
It's torn to you.
It's a 20-minute read. It's. I was going to get into it coming up at 4, but yeah, we can do it. No, it's
no,
great.
No, I don't want it to tease it. Tease
no, not at all. It's beautiful.
It's everything you thought he was.
Yeah, and it's
But...
Well, listen, there's plenty that makes Rodgers look bad.
The quarterback has some culpability in that relationship
he's
disintegrating.
He's a major loon. He's a complete weirdo.
Yes, he is, and we knew that, and you could see it. Like, you were watching them, and he was passing up short passes, and if you listen to him do interviews, he borders on being too smart for his own good and eccentric and that sort of thing.
It's more than that. He is on the spectrum of sports genius as sociopath in the same way that Jordan was.
That's
so many of the aspects of his personality reminded me of covering Michael Jordan every day. And it's a compliment. It's also a bit of a curse. In some ways, Jordan's more human. And Jordan's more normal.
Well, Rodgers is more well-read and more well-rounded than Jordan. You know,
it's not an intelligence issue.
No, it's not. But I'm saying, so he probably doesn't see himself as being so laser focused on one thing. He takes trips in the off season to visit the Dalai Lama.
Wonderful.
And you know what I mean? He wins.
Big hitter, the Lama.
He wins Jeopardy, and he does charity. And he's the leader like Jordan and Kobe are the leader, and that he just tries to outwork everybody. And he's like, why aren't you guys as good as me?
And
they're not.
The passive aggressive hate. Hazing.
Yes.
I mean, Jordan would do that all the time where I'm done passing this guy the ball. Done with it.
And I thought the worst thing for Rodgers was the call at the end of the article about the hiring of Matt LaFleur, and he's not excited. He pauses. And he's like, okay, I guess. And then he's like, no, don't be the problem.
A Jay Cutler-like response to the news.
Don't you be the problem. And that's being told. And listen, great players need to be coached, and they need to be pushed, and that's what happened with Jordan, right? Like, Phil got Jordan to say, okay, you could score 37 a game and we can lose, or you could score 30 a game and other guys can be there and you can win.
A little bit. I think Phil got credit for sort of herding all those egos, but Michael coached Michael.
Sure. Do you think that he deserved credit for convincing Michael that, you know, occasionally it was okay to pass Pax the ball and Kerr the ball?
Yes, but only when Jordan himself
was 100% certain it was in the best interest of him winning the championship. He had to learn it for himself. It's not that Phil told him whether it's right or not. The only reason at any point for Jordan to think the best thing for me and for the team.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.